committee will come to order. We don't yet have a quorum, but we don't need one to begin. We do need one before we can vote. But in the out of respect for our testifiers and the several senators that are here to present bills, I think we should get started this morning. And it is Military Day in the Tax Committee, and we have very honored guests here this morning to present on these bills. And so the committee is very excited to have you here. You're all welcome. Senator Daley, I understand you'd like to begin, but we also have similar bills being offered and concepts by Senators Wieger and Kubley. So if you would all like to join us at the table, and maybe we could just get a sense of what these bills are, and then we can take the testimony in support of these bills. I think just so we all have a sense of what they all do, I think it would be helpful. So Senator Daley, if you would like to begin and just explain your bill, if you wouldn't mind.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. It's an honor to be here this morning before you and humbly discuss these issues so important to veterans, but even more so at this time where jobs are so important to all Minnesotans. This really, the bill that I present to you this morning, is really a jobs bill. We need to attract veterans to this state, and veterans who have served a career in the military are oftentimes majors, lieutenant colonels, colonels in the Army. They're senior NCOs, which is a high-ranking enlisted soldier, and they've got 20 or more years of service, lots of leadership experience, advanced degrees, master's degrees, even doctorates, and many, many years of leadership experience, the kind of talent that our Fortune 500 companies are looking for, whether it's 3M, Best Buy, U.S. Bank, many different companies are looking for, or small companies too, looking for this kind of leadership talent. The military pension exemption is increasingly a competitive issue as well. 31 states offer this type of thing that we're talking about in this bill, and 9 states don't have state income tax. So we're at a competitive disadvantage right now, with just a few states not offering something similar to this. There is a tension that we have, short-term and long-term. We understand that there is a $6.2 billion deficit that we hear about and discuss and struggle with every day. So why this, why now? Well, the way the bill that I present is structured takes all of those things into account, and it's a phased-in approach, so it's not all at once, not all up front. The first year is 10%, the second year is 20%, and so it's a small cost up front in these next couple of years, and as we attract those talented individuals, the money that they bring into the state and the jobs that they have will offset the exemption. So without getting into too many of the details right now, essentially it pays for itself as it goes along through the years. And the chair knows, this is a bill very similar to one that she has authored in the past, so the chair and many others are familiar with this concept and the items in this bill. Just a few facts. Second career military pay by DOD in the United States was 1.904230, so 1,904,230 individuals received this throughout the states. Minnesota in 2009 had just 0.857% of these individuals, so less than 1%. The percentage has risen just 0.05%. in the past 9 years. Total money is brought into the state each month, so multiply this number by 12 to get an annual figure. Each month, second military career military is $26,140,000. So do some quick math, it's over $250 million on an annual basis. Currently, $16,334 are being paid by DOD, Department of Defense. And the average payment, though, is relatively small. It's just $1,600 a month, or on an annual basis, $19,200. So with that, just a few facts and a little background. I'll pass it on to the other state senators here.
Senator Daley, thank you so much and for your advocacy on this issue as well. And members, I just want to point out, let the record reflect that there is a quorum here present this morning now. Senator Wieger, would you like to talk about just the basics of your proposal so we're all on board understanding what the differences are before we take the testimony?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, Senate File 59 provides a subtraction from the federal of what you had in your pension for military service. Straight up, that's what it is. And the difference with Senator Daley's is he has a phase-in. We support each other's approach. There's tempering this with the reality of what we have in the budget, but this perhaps would advocate the best-case scenario, and testifiers will reiterate the importance of it because of jobs, recognition of their service, et cetera.
Thank you. And then Senator Kubley, you also have a subtraction for income. Is that correct?
I do, Madam Chair. And mine just starts at $6,000, I guess. I've been before this committee as well with a bill like this, and it didn't go any further. In the current economic climate, I thought maybe getting started somewhere, and I just kind of chose $6,000 at the recommendation of a couple of vets that live in my district. They're both over 80, so they didn't want to come today, but they appreciated being offered. But, as Senator Daley mentioned, there are a lot of retired vets out there, and Minnesota really doesn't attract their share. The average state has a little over 33,000 veterans living in it. Minnesota has a little over 18,000. So if we could pick up those additional 15,000, it does seem to me that this kind of bill would pay for itself over time, even though we don't tax their retirement income as military veterans. We would receive taxes from any employment that they had or any small business that they started. There are a couple of retired vets living in my hometown. Both of them have started a small business. And while one of them only employs himself and his spouse, the other one employs a couple other people, too. So it does seem to me that getting our share of retired veterans coming to Minnesota would, in fact, increase contributions that are made, even though it's not coming from their military retirement benefit.
Thank you. And members, Senate File 142 is fourth on our agenda, and that one deals with property tax benefits, and so we'll deal with that one separately, if you don't mind, Senators. And here in support of Senator Daley's.
Madam Chair, can I ask
Senator Buck?
Author a question? Senator Daley, the fiscal note on the bill says there's 16,700 taxpayers that received military pension compensation in 2008. Do you know how many of them are eligible for the current income tax credit that we give to military pension holders? And Senator Daley, just as a little bit of history, in 2008, in the conference committee, we had some provisions relative to an exclusion from income tax for military pensions. And the final negotiations with the governor in the conference committee created a tax credit for lower income military veterans who are receiving a pension. And Senator Daley, have any idea how many of the 16,700 are taking advantage of the existing tax credit that's allowed for military pensioners?
Senator Bach, we do have someone here from the Department of Revenue who might be willing to address that point. Is there someone from the department here that could address that point? Thank you.
Madam Chair, I bring it up because I think everybody in the room should understand we have a tax credit in law that does this. It's not as though we have not been sensitive to our military people on pensions. We do have a tax credit for them, and maybe the department can explain how it works and how many people might be taking advantage of it.
Yeah, Senator Buck, I think that might be best. Good morning and
sure.
Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Mark Peterson. I'm an attorney with the department. Senator Buck, you're right. We do have a credit. I don't know how many of these folks that we're trying to get at with this bill are getting that credit. It's a $750 non-refundable credit that starts. That's not really technically tied to a pension, but I think a lot of the people that get pensions would be eligible. You have to have 20 years of service. But it starts phasing out at $30,000 of adjusted gross income, so it is really a lower income credit. I don't know how many. I do not have the numbers. I, of course, can get it for you.
Thank you. Senator Howell.
Well, I was getting ready to ask a question, but Madam Chair, I guess I'll ask it. Do we know what with the Iraq and Afghanistan complement that we've sent, what our numbers are going to do for Minnesota in the future? Are the numbers going to stay constant, or is it going to go up? Have we looked at the long-range impact?
Senator Howell, we have some testifiers that are going to speak on behalf of the veterans, and I would ask them to join us at the committee table. We have first Representative Dan Severson is here, and Ralph Denias, Chair of United Veterans Legislative Council of Minnesota and President of the Retired Enlisted Association. And Representative Severson, welcome to the Senate and to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and it's an honor to be here before you today. And I appreciate the fact that Senator Daley's willing to carry this bill, and we've got several others that are interested. I think it bodes well for the legislature to recognize the importance of the second career military. These are individuals that are sought out by corporate executives, CEOs of Fortune 500 companies. They bring with them spouses, often who are highly educated, and are bringing with them a second income. When these individuals retire from the military, they're coming to places to look to start a new beginning. High volunteer rate, they bring with their own health care benefits. They are the people that we want in these communities. And part of this process is to say, as Senator Bach was talking about the $750 tax credit, that was something that was meant to try and compensate individuals on a benefit basis to say, you know what, if you don't have enough income, here's an offset. But what this bill aims to do is to say, hey, Minnesota is one of six states that currently tax military pensions. And so we're trying to say, you know what, it's cold in Minnesota. We don't have a lot of bases here. And if we continue to tax this pension, we're basically holding our hand up and saying to those individuals who can go to any one of the 50 states, move to any one of those 50 states and set up their life, we're basically saying to them, we don't want you in Minnesota. So in this provision that's being put before you now, it's a fiscally conservative phase-in that stops at 30%. At 30%, if we haven't gained the numbers that are in the bill of 1,500 within the time span, the bill stays at 30%. And then when it's when that 1,500 is reached in order to pay back or backfill some of the revenues that are lost, then it goes to the next 40%, goes up to 70%, and then is held at that plateau. So as we see the numbers of retirees increase in the state, then it's moves into the phase out for a complete 100%. But Madam Chair and members, this is a bill whose time has come. If we are looking to the future for Minnesota, for jobs in the future, high-tech jobs with the people who have the technology and the expertise, the managerial skills to carry this state forward like we should be doing, this is a bill that should be passed through this body and through the House and signed by the governor.
Thank you, Representative Severson. We also have Ralph Denias, the chair of the United Veterans Legislative Council of Minnesota. Thank you, and welcome to the committee, sir.
Good morning, Madam Chair and senators. I came before you this morning to give my testimony in support of this bill. in the past, since 1994 when I retired, as Mr. Severson has stated, I started my own business in Minnesota. My business is called Top D Entertainment. It's a DJ business. But I could not live just on my pension. And the reason I moved to Minnesota is because this is where Mama wanted to live. I have a college degree. I graduated cum laude from St. Cloud State. I'm active in the community. I'm active in the American Legion, the VFW. I help support a 37-acre soccer, rugby complex for the youth of our area. I have had three spine surgeries that haven't cost the state a penny because I brought my own medical insurance with me when I came from the military. The second career folks that are coming to Minnesota are right at technology's edge when it comes to being aware of what's going on. When I was in the military back in the 80s, I saw the development of the Predator, which is very famous on the news of how it helped save American lives by not putting our pilots in harm's way. But that technology was there many, many years before the average person here in Minnesota was even aware that it existed. That same advance in technology continues on in the military, and we need to bring those people to Minnesota to help our businesses. They're the ideal person that they want. We're drug tested. Most of us have security clearances. We have all the things that a company would be looking for, and we're not going to start at a McDonald's wage, a minimum wage, because of our backgrounds. So I would ask and urge that all of you really consider this. This form that I added in here basically has all the points that Senator Daley talked about. Shows where Minnesota's at. We're 33 in the nation. We've been at the bottom 30s and not for the last 9 years. We have not gone up the scale at all. The other data, he already talked about most of it on the right-hand side, so if you were taking notes very quickly while he was speaking, it's all there for you already, so you can go through it at your leisure and look at it. And I would ask that if you have any questions whatsoever, please contact me. I'm willing to come down and help with whatever I can. And the last part I'd like to say is that the United Veterans Legislative Council has 33 members. And our membership discusses these issues and said, yes, we're in favor of this issue. So it's not just any one veterans organization in the state. It's not just the military retirees or the officer retirees. It's across the board. The 33 have voted and said, yes, we would like to see this go forward. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Denise, may I ask, what was your branch of service?
I was the United States Marine Corps from 1964 to 1994. I retired as a Master Gunnery Sergeant. I was the senior enlisted person in the Marine Corps in my field, working at Headquarters Marine Corps.
Thank you so much for your service. You're clearly on the numbers here, and I wanted to ask you a question. What is the average age of the military retiree? I think it's pretty young, isn't it? I think that's something we should be thinking about here, that there are many folks that really are ready for a second career because they're retiring so young. Do you have any information about the average age of the retirees?
On the enlisted side of the house, because many of those folks went straight into the service at age 18, you're looking at early 40s, 38, 39, 40. Myself, at the end of 30 years, I retired at age 48 because I went in when I was 18. Officers, because they usually have at least 4 years of college, tend to enter the service at age 22, 23, so you're looking at somebody at a minimum of 20 years would be 44, 45 years old.
Thank you, and looking around this table, I'd like to think we all can make lots of contributions after age 40. Senator Howe.
Well, Madam Chair, the reason I asked my question, I guess I'll have to draw it out, because I was hoping I'd get the response that we're going to have a lot more retirees from Minnesota, because I was hoping that our numbers of the people that are being retained. Because the point I wanted to make is I'm not so focused on trying to draw people in here. I think we need to work on retention. And we need to stop the flow of people who retire that move to California, Arizona, Florida, and these other places. So if we can have a better atmosphere here, I work a lot with the VFW and the American Legion, and a lot of these folks are, from their hometown, and they're in these organizations that volunteer, and I think we need to focus on keeping these people here. So if our numbers are going up, I would think that this would stop the flow of people leaving, and that's that's the point I was wanting to make. So,
thank you, Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, Senator, we've only increased on an average of 300 retirees per year since 2001. We haven't really increased very much over the last 9 years. All this data is available in that actuary. I have talked with military recruiters. You know, military folks have a tight awareness of each other, or whatever you want to call it. Whenever we get together, we discuss how our thing is, what branch of service are you in. And most of the recruiters that I talk to that are career military, when I say, well, you're going to stay here when you get out, I'm sorry to tell you that most of them say, not unless they change the tax laws.
That is sad news, certainly. We also have Jerry Kaiser, the Vice Chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council of Minnesota. Mr. Kaiser, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and Senators. I am Jerry Kaiser, Roseville, Minnesota. I am a Vietnam combat disabled veteran, and I was only in the service for 3 years. Now, there's a misnomer on this. Because of my combat injuries, I get a disability payment every month, and that is not taxable by the state. It is not taxable by the federal. All veterans do get that who have a service-connected disability. And I also am the principal in a service in a business and belong to the service-disabled veteran-owned small businesses in the state of Minnesota. And our premise is that we'd like to get more high-qualified veterans coming to the state of Minnesota that we can hire. Now, every time that a veteran goes through his 20 years, he gets there's a part of his getting out of the service. They have a big session where they decide on which state they're going to go to, and that particular officer that gives that seminar tells them which states are the ones they'd like to go to. And it all depends on what their interests are and where they might go, and they want to go to the ones that have the least amount of tax. Minnesota, again, has these high technical companies, and in my experience with that, it is difficult for them to get a senior officer corps or enlisted to come here when they're $3,000 a month pension is taxed. Now, that doesn't mean every person who gets out of the service gets that kind of pension. It looks like the average here is $19,200. Well, that puts you in a different tax bracket. I have friends of mine that are retired military, and they're in the enclaves just across the border. The expatriate Minnesotans, I call them, they live in Princeton, Hudson, and along the river over there in New Richmond, Wisconsin, and Ellsworth. They reside there, and they live in, and work. They work in Minnesota. Also, we want to be able to get Minnesota to change some of their tax laws, which is part of the responsibility of this. We have friends that have their businesses in Wisconsin who are hiring only service-disabled veteran-owned businesses because of the climate in the state of Minnesota getting his business going. He's a born and bred Minnesotan. He wants to live here. He still does, but he says, you know, I'd like to get this changed. And so that's why our organization, along with the United Veterans Council and these gentlemen here, are sponsoring this. It's important for us to get on the upper end of the curve instead of the lower half. Take any questions if you'd like.
Mr. Kaiser, are you saying that there is like a transition counseling session or planning session for our military folks that are exiting the military, and they're comparing different places to live and start a second career? Those are all options they're being considered as part of their transition out of the military?
Well, now, I spent 3 years in the service, two of them in Vietnam, and that was 40 years ago. And I'm not really privy to it, but Mr. Severson is.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There is. It's called a transition assistance program. And typically when the member comes within about a year of retirement, they'll schedule this, and the member will go to certain transition assistance sites. And they put on about a 2 or 3 day seminar that basically outlines what are the benefits and what are the liabilities of each of the states? Because these individuals are highly mobile. They've typically moved every 3 years, which means they don't have the opportunity typically to buy a house and to own a house. And so what we find is when they get out, they come to the community that they're deciding to live in, and they've done the research to figure out what's going to be to their best tax advantage, what's going to be the greatest opportunities for employment, what's the place where they want to live, where their kids are going to get a good education, and they like the community, and they're going to buy a house, and they're going to join a church, and they're going to be part of the volunteer program within the community, and their spouses, who are typically highly educated, are going to be contributors to the community, and a lot of times professionals that are receiving high incomes as well. So you're not just bringing one additional income besides the pension to the state. You're also bringing the spouse with their income, plus buying a house. And in the later years, that individual is committing to a minimum of 15 years of house payments to as much as 30. There's the difference between the teachers and the firefighters and the police, is that these individuals are coming to the state, they're bringing in federal dollars. These are dollars that are generated outside the state, they're bringing those into the state, and now they have to make payments on that house, where other individuals who have lived within the state for the last 20 or 30 years, retiring in the state, are drawing from a state pension, and their houses are typically paid for. So you have a large revenue source that's coming in that comes from out of state that we would not be able to tap into, and that's what this bill is about. This is about recruiting talent to the state of Minnesota.
Okay.
Thank you. Senator Hoffman and then Senator Bach.
Thank you. Thank you for your service, gentlemen. Thank you, Madam Chair. This is just a comment. We had a site selector in the other day, and he was telling us, you know, for businesses, he was telling us that Minnesota ranks 31st in site selection, which means businesses don't really look at us. And so it's interesting on your chart that we rank 33rd. Minnesota seems to like to be in the 30s, and I would like to see us move up higher on the curve, too. So thank you for bringing this bill, Senator Daley.
Senator Buck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Severson, as retiring military personnel kind of make that decision, there's a number of criteria I'm sure go into the decision. Some of it, frankly, I happen to believe is probably climate. Some of it's maybe where their family, and being a grandparent, I can know from my standpoint, I know where I would want to be, close to my grandchildren. But, you know, these are smart individuals. I mean, do they take into consideration more than just income tax? I'm just wondering, because I see, you know, Florida's real high on the list here. Florida has horribly high property taxes. I mean, multiple times higher than Minnesota on your home. They tax food, they tax clothing, they tax services. You know, I'm just kind of wondering, to what extent do they do research on really what is my tax burden going to be? Because I know here, I know people that Minnesota snowbirds that have left Minnesota and have located in Florida for 6 months and a day, and then they come back and live on one of Minnesota's lakes for a big part of the year. Frankly, people I probably would consider friends that do that. But they tell me there's not a lot of savings for them. The people I know, it's about climate and getting out of the winter. And, I mean, I've had them tell me how terribly high their property taxes are, and their little modest home in Florida are much higher than their summer home on Lake Vermilion. And so I just kind of wonder, if you put all the taxes into a package, the higher property taxes in Florida, the sales tax on food, the sales tax on clothing, the sales tax on services, none of those, I just kind of wonder if in the whole basket of taxes, the taxes are really the overriding consideration, because I believe these individuals are very smart, and they're looking at what their property tax burden is going to be, what their sales tax burden is going to be, and is it really just income tax that they look at?
Representative Severson. Sure.
I'm sure, and thank you, Senator Bach. And that's a part of the equation. Florida, however, does not have an income tax.
I understand that.
So right off the get-go, people are attracted down there. And I think the individuals that you're talking about are in their retirement phase. These are individuals who have been through their careers. They're now on their retirement, and they're spending 6 months and a day down there and 6 months up here because they want to evade the oppressive tax process that we have in Minnesota. That's part of the issue that we're trying to address here. But the bottom line, I think, on it is we can fix this by, and really the issue is we're not targeting them. We're targeting those individuals that are getting out of the military, that are looking for a second career. So when they are, in fact, in the transition assistance program, they lay out the 50 states, and they'll say, these are the tax advantages of living in these particular areas. These are the bases that are in these particular areas where you can get some of the services. And this is the economy, the jobs, the education. They'll lay all of that out. And these individuals do the research. They've been in 20 to 30 years. They're executive class individuals. So they're going to do the research, and this is just one venue. Now, in this bill, you get about a $1,500 tax break for individuals that are in the upper income scale. That's not a huge deal, but what the signal is to these individuals is that Minnesota cares about veterans and about your service. When you've got six states that basically say, we don't give a rip, we don't, you know, if you've been in the military, we're still going to tax your pension, they're basically immediately saying, we don't regard your military service. All the other 44 have gotten it. They say, you know what, you've been in the military, you've served your country, and we're going to take this into consideration. And so we're not going to tax that pension. We understand when you come to the state, you're going to be a contributor, and we'll tax those other incomes. But that one, we're going to leave alone. And so what we're saying to those individuals is, we care. If you pass this bill, we care about your military service.
Well, Madam Chair, kind of to that point, Mr. Stevenson, I'm sorry, but I have huge respect for military veterans. My dad is one. Turned 90 years old yesterday. But, you know, what do I tell if I'm going to exempt pensions of people who served in the military? Former Senator Dean Johnson, for example, drawing a military pension. How do I rationalize not charging income taxes on Senator Johnson's pension, but charging income taxes on police officers and firefighters whose lives are at risk every day? They're a very small group of Minnesotans that when they go out the door in the morning to go to work, there is a question in their family's mind of whether they're going to return home safely every day of their career. And so where, it's not that I don't respect our veterans, I love them, my dad is one, but how do I square it with other Minnesotans who put their lives at risk every day of their career, and we do tax their pensions? I mean,
Senator Bach, Representative Severson, further comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Question?
Yeah, just and just to that comment, and this is an argument that is typically used, and again, when we go to the issue of what is this bill about? This bill is about attracting individuals who, but for this provision, are not coming to the state of Minnesota. They're bringing federal dollars from outside the state in. Now, the teachers and the firefighters certainly have served their local communities, but I'll tell you, having been in the military and having lost a lot of buddies, just in the training phases, we're not even talking in the combat phase. When that individual walks out the door in the morning, it's probably more likely in the military than not that they are going to receive somebody coming to the door and telling them that their loved one is no longer with us. The dangers from the military are significantly higher, even in a training phase. But that, all of that set aside, that's not what this bill is about. This bill is about attracting talent. It's about economic stimulus. And so if you'll pass this bill, we take away one of those impediments to bringing those individuals to the state.
Well, Madam Chair,
Senator Bach,
Mr. Severson, this committee, the Tax Committee, and I don't know if you had the privilege of serving on the Tax Committee in the House or not, but the Tax Committee, more than any committee in the legislature, pays very close attention to precedents, because decisions we make here, we have to rationalize next year when the next group comes, or the year after when the next group comes. Precedent is very, very important around this table. So when you start going down that path in this room, more than any other committee, we have to be very, very careful, because small decisions that get made here cost a lot of money to the state's general fund and have an impact on what money is available on the spending side of the equation. So I think all former tax committee members have always taken precedents into consideration when we're discussing these kind of issues.
Thank you, Senator Bach. I think one of the key distinctions here is we are talking about pensions paid by the federal government versus pensions that are paid by the state government, and the question is whether the state government will factor in that federal service when that pension is paid into our state's tax code. And I think it's a fair question. We already have a tax credit on this. I think most Minnesotans that I've talked to would like to see us head in this direction to honor the service of our military veterans. And so that's why we have this hearing today, because there is a very strong voice on the part of Minnesotans to take this measure if we can.
Madam Chair.
Senator Michelle, and then if we could have Mr. Larry Ryan, Commander, North St. Paul American Legion Post, and Robert T. Bennett, Lieutenant Colonel, U.S. Air Force, join us at the committee table. Senator Daley.
One quick note to follow up with Senator Bach's comments and concerns about precedence. Up until 1978, I understand that this was exempt. This pay was exempt. So I'm not sure what happened in 1978 to change the law, but it was exempt up until that point.
Thank you, Senator Daley. And Senator Michelle.
And Madam Chair, for just some thoughts with my friend Senator Bach, I think we're going to go back and forth along this kind of philosophical debate for a while. I guess a couple thoughts. I think the argument that Senator Bach just made about precedent and singling out any one group, I think that's an important argument to be had. I think it's also an argument for tax relief or tax cuts for all, that we need to do better as a state in all categories, individuals, job creators, et cetera. And the other thing I would mention, you know, in the comparison of states, and we lose. We're always going to lose to Florida on climate, except maybe in July. I'd rather be with you in July than with some of our friends in Florida. But we've at least got to be in the game. And so when we see these indexes and surveys and hear about how people are making choices and we're 30th or 40th in the nation, I think we do have to take action. And I think somewhere in this discussion, not necessarily for the folks at the table today, but I saw a study just yesterday about our estate and inheritance and death taxes. And after some federal tax action at the end of the year, we're in the top 15 for the highest inheritance taxes that families must pay. So, you know, there we go again. There we go again. I think that does have an actual direct bearing on some of the decisions that military families are making. And maybe that's something we can look into further down the road, Madam Chair.
Senator Michelle, when you look at all of our tax types, we're in the worst brackets of all. We don't compare well on any of them. And so when you take that whole structure into consideration, it's pretty hard to choose Minnesota to start a business or to move and start a second career. It makes it, you know, pretty hard to do.
Well,
Senator Bach.
Senator Urban, I think it's interesting how we keep going down this road of saying this state is such a bad place. I do not agree, Minnesotans. This is a good state. And this is a good state to do business in. We wouldn't have 21 Fortune 500 companies headquartered in this state if this wasn't a good state to do business. So, one, I don't think that's true, that this is a bad place to do business.
Madam Chair.
And two, to Senator Michelle's point, the difference between the spending committees and the tax committee is when we make a decision on something like this, this is called a tax expenditure, and we don't revisit it. It is not like the spending committees, where the spending committees, every biennium, we have the department in and we do an overview of where all the appropriations go. And I've heard people talk about, we're going to start with a blank sheet of paper and we're going to have zero-based budgeting and we're going to look at every appropriation to make sure we're getting our bang for the buck. And I encourage the spending side of the legislature to do that. But in this committee, this is a tax expenditure. And when we put this in law, we won't revisit it. It automatically will happen every year. The legislature will not revisit it. And the only people that will ever look at it again are those that care about the department's biannual report on tax expenditures. And there's a small number of us that look at that, and we'll look at it and say, oh, that those prescription eyeglasses, I guess that costs us $38 million a year to not tax those. And Band-Aids are going to cost this much. We don't tax them, and canes and crutches, and you can go down the list. But there's a very small number of us that look at the tax expenditure side. That's why this is important, because when you make a change like this on tax expenditures, and we have hundreds of them in law that would be taxed if we didn't specifically exempt them in law, is they then are automatic. The legislature does not take another look at them. It's automatic spending going forward. I'm not saying this isn't worth doing, but we have a lot of new members of the tax committee that just need to understand when you go down this road, this is not something that you ought periodically review like the spending committees do, because this committee is different.
Senator Michel.
Madam Chair, the caffeine's kicking in. I don't think Senator Hoffman or Senator Ortman or myself, I don't think anyone in this entire state Senate has said anything about Minnesota being a bad place. This has been a very appealing state, and we want it to continue that way. I just think we can't be blind to some of the numbers and some of the facts, Senator Bach, and I think it's a good discussion to have. And I agree with half of your statement. We are fortunate to have some large companies that are headquartered here.
Senator Michel, I'm sensing compromise.
But
if we can get them to half, we can get them to three-quarter, Madam Chair.
We are fortunate to have some of those larger headquarter companies, but those companies are not expanding here anymore. You know, Delta had a choice, and they chose Georgia. 3M has many choices across the world. They're choosing Texas and overseas. Medtronic has a choice. They're not choosing Minnesota to expand. General Mills has had a choice. They're not choosing Minnesota to expand. We should dive into why that is happening, and I'm not going to pretend that either you or I have the total 100% story of those decisions. But I don't think we can rest on the fact that, hey, we have these great headquarter companies here. We do, but we want them to expand here. We want more headquarter companies here. And so, Madam Chair, I appreciate your indulging a slight tangent from the testimony this morning, but I do think it's something we're going to go back and forth a lot on, and let's do it in a good way.
Well, I do think, members, that we should get back to the military pay exemption. We've gotten pretty far away from the subject matter here, and we have other testifiers. And we have Commander Larry Ryan from the North St. Paul American Legion, Post 39. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I want to thank Senator Wigger for inviting me to come testify in support of this bill. I also like to thank Senators Daley and Kubelik for introducing their bills as well and their efforts. 6 days after graduating from Washington High School here in St. Paul, I enlisted in the United States Air Force in June of 1973 with the intention of serving my four-year enlistment, getting all the training that I could in law enforcement, and returning to become a St. Paul police officer. However, due to the lack of job openings on the police force and the fact we had a baby on the way, I decided to reenlist. The same thing happened again at the end of that enlistment, so I again reenlisted. This put me at 12 years of active duty. I decided to make the Air Force a career. In July of 1993, I retired from the Air Force, and despite Arizona being my last assignment, and despite the fact that my pension of $1,039.50 a month was subject to our state income tax, I still packed up my family and moved back to Minnesota because, as Senator Bach has indicated, it's a great place to live. In my career, I had spoken with a number of other service members, whether I was stationed here at the former Duluth Air Force Base or other parts of the world. Many of them spoke of their admiration for Minnesota, especially with our lakes, natural resources, and the large corporations that are headquartered here, such as 3M, Best Buy, Medtronic. They also spoke of the University of Minnesota and other points about the state. But they're all in agreement on one thing, and that was the fact that their retirement income would be subject to state income tax. Wisconsin, Iowa, and the Dakotas exempt some, if not all, of their military pay from state income tax. They then opted for other places to settle when they retired. In the past, we have considered joining the other 41 states that have the exemptions in some or all in part, but rarely those bills ever make it out of the committees. By passing this or one of the similar bills into law, you'd be continuing the trend to make Minnesota the most veteran-friendly state in the country. You would give Minnesota service members the incentive to remain here when they've completed their service to their country and attract many of their brothers and sisters in arms to relocate here despite the winter weather. The University of Minnesota and other state colleges would undoubtedly see an increase in enrollment by veterans using your benefits to further their education. Many of the retirees will already have a two or four-year degree when they leave the military. The enlisted promotion boards for senior NCOs in the late 80s and early 90s leaned toward those candidates that had received these degrees while studying off-duty. As Colonel Bennett will probably attest, the officer promotions were geared the same way. If an Air Force captain had not started studies toward or achieved a master's degree, he had a lesser chance of being promoted before anybody that had. The retirees can further their studies towards a higher degree. In addition, military retirees leave the military with a strong sense of work ethics, self-discipline, and dependability. These are all qualities that every employer looks for. And the technical training that today's military members receive is second to none. The military provides training and hands-on experience in hundreds of career categories, from skilled medical professionals through aircraft and heavy equipment technicians and many administrative and managerial fields. This experience, sense of work ethics, and discipline learned in the military can only help boost Minnesota's employment ranks and also provide excellent trainers in those fields. In closing, I ask you to take a serious look at what exempting military retirement pay would do in attracting experienced, trained veterans to our state. It's another way of saying thank you to those who at one point in their life stepped up and wrote a check payable to the United States of America in the amount up to and including their life. That is honor, and there's not as much of that as there used to be in this country. This bill would be a way of returning that check uncashed with interest. Chairman Ortman, members of the committee, Senators Wieger, Kubley, and Daley, I'd like to thank you again for this opportunity. As a retired enlisted member of the United States Air Force, I feel safe to say that I speak for the majority of my fellow retirees that we urge your support in forwarding of this bill. I'm open to any questions you may have.
Thank you, Commander. Lieutenant Colonel Robert Bennett from the U.S. Air Force, retired president of the Military Officers Association of America. And I do need you to
Madam Chair, the Lieutenant Colonel Senator is not able to make it, but I do have another Navy Lieutenant, Senator Reinhart. And he's a co-author on the bill, and I could yield for him as a testifier.
Senator Reinhart, welcome to the committee. You do need to state your name again for the record,
Madam Chair.
You're very welcome here. Thank you for coming this morning.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Roger Reinhart, Senate District 7, and I bring you greetings on behalf of Colonel Bennett. He's the president of our Military Officers Association of America up in Duluth and had intended on coming but wasn't able to make it here this morning. But I share with you that I spoke at their meeting in January, and this was the top issue that we talked about. Membership understood it. Membership wanted to chat about it. And I would just, if I might, Madam Chair, highlight a couple things in terms of my co-authorship on this bill. First of all, I think Representative Severson highlighted what I think are sort of the critical drivers around this. Military retirees are highly skilled, they're highly mobile, and they're second career individuals. And I'll cite for you just an example. Commander Eric Isaacson, last commander of the reserve station in Duluth, since then has been posted in San Diego, is currently posted in Detroit, and if Cirrus starts making planes again, he will retire and come back to Duluth. But as other testifiers have mentioned, figuring out what that tax picture is going to look like, especially when we're one of the few states that still does not do this, plays into that decision, no matter how much they want to come back to Minnesota. But the other thing I would mention, and I want to highlight what Senator Bach's comments were, and I served on the Tax Committee in the House, and I understand how expenditures work, and we don't revisit them, which is one of the reasons that I authored the Tax Expenditure Committee bill. And hopefully, Madam Chair, you'll take a look at that, because we do write expenditures in, and we don't revisit them, and they're ongoing blank checks. Now, my support of this bill is not that we ought not do that. It's that we ought to look at those in a big picture and decide which are the ones that reflect our values right now and the ones that we want to move forward. So, Madam Chair, thank you for letting me say a few words. I do actually read the tax incident study as well. It's really fun reading, new members, if you haven't had a chance to do that, especially about 11:30 at night if you're having trouble falling asleep. But thank you again for letting me make a few words. And again, Colonel Bennett's sorry he wasn't able to be here this morning, but is supportive of all three of the bills.
Senator Reinert, thank you for your testimony. Are there others from the public that would like to speak about any of these provisions? Anyone here to testify? No? Senators Kubley, Daly, and Weger, maybe you can join us at the table for our discussion. Members, comments or questions for the senators? Well, Senators, thank you so much for your proposals this morning. I think they're very important for us to consider. As Senator Daly pointed out, I've carried them in the past. I think it's the right thing to do. The question is whether we can fit this into our budget balancing proposals. I'm not sure how that's going to fit in. And so without objection, I would recommend that this committee lay all three bills over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And I would just point out, for the record, the distinctions between them. Senator Daly's phases in the relief. Senator Weger's would adopt it immediately. Senator Kubley's would have a cap on the income that's excluded. Is that right, Senator Kubley?
That's correct, Madam Chair. Right. Also, this document from NCSL, you can get it online. But I think it has a lot of good information.
Senator Kubley, I'm sorry to interrupt. Can you tell us what that source was again so we can take a note?
NCSL says that there are now only five states with no pension exclusion. It comes from the tax year 2009, just slightly different from what the other two senators have said. But their exclusions go from 2000 to a full exclusion. Some of the states increase that when you reach retirement age. There are really quite a few variations across the states that offer it, Madam Chair. But it's quite interesting to take a look at if you're seriously considering adoption of one of these proposals.
Thank you, Senator Kubley. Senator Daly.
Madam Chair, based on the conversation that they had, I believe it was yesterday in the House, they had a delete all amendment. And I would offer that as something that the committee consider. It's what you'd call the A1 amendment to my bill, and it reduces the percentages in the early years to 10%, 20%, 30%. As I mentioned, phasing this in and being able to afford it is important. We're very sensitive to the economic environment, the budget environment that we have. And since this is so important as a jobs bill to attract great talent, we want to do it prudently and with a fiduciary responsibility in mind.
Senator Daly, are you asking us to consider this A1 amendment as an author's amendment to your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Right, Senator Daly. Senator Daly moves the A1 as an author's amendment to his bill. I guess you can't move it. I can move that. And members, the chair moves that the A1 be adopted as an author's amendment as a courtesy to Senator Daly. Any comments, objections, questions about that motion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The A1 is adopted, Senator Daly. And now if you'd like to just explain a little further how this changes your bill and how does it relate to what Senator Weger has proposed, because you're now talking about a phase-in again.
Yes, Madam Chair. Perhaps we could have Ms. Allen describe some of the details. I can share with you that the intent is to responsibly move this measure forward so that we can afford it. I am very sensitive to the budget environment that we're in. I think it's important. There's a tension between short-term and long-term, and I think we can do this, even in this environment.
Thank you. Ms. Allen.
Madam Chair, members, there are three main differences between the delete all amendment and the original bill. The first one you'll notice on page 4 of the delete all, it changes the percentages. It lowers them. so that in the first year, the percent of military retirement pay that would not be subject to tax is 10%, and then 20%, and then 30% in the out year. So it reduces that amount. The second change is that the number of individuals to increase the amount up to 70% and then to 100% is also greater. Originally, it was only 1,000. Here, it's 1,500 and 3,000. And then the final difference is the effective date. The original bill that Senator Daley had made it effective for tax year 2011. This would begin in tax year 2012. So it pushes it out and lowers the cost.
Ms. Allen, do we have a fiscal note on the delete all amendment?
Madam Chair, not that I'm aware of.
Senator Daley?
Madam Chair, this just happened yesterday in the House, and I just wanted to share this with this committee, what they have learned in the on the House side, so that it can be, again, a responsible, affordable, in this environment kind of bill. And from what I understand, essentially with these numbers, it's a bit complex. It's not just a single number. It's phased in over time, and it essentially pays for itself as it goes, so to speak, with the offset of the income that they bring in that is taxable versus what's being exempt.
Senator Daley and members, we'll ask for a new fiscal note on the bill as amended, so members can look at that while we take it under advisement over the next several weeks. Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, Senator Daley, what you just described, that it pays for itself by the money that it brings in, just as a new member, I want to explain to you, around here our fiscal analysts would call that dynamic scoring, where we introduce a bill that costs money and we say, oh, but by the way, there's some other money going to come in over someplace. Senator Daley, you'll learn we don't score bills that way. The bills cost what the Department of Revenue tells us they cost, and we don't. I wish we did get the opportunity to say that there are going to be other impacts as a result of this legislation that's going to bring in money, and so my bill raises money rather than costs money. But Senator Daley, might want to remember the word dynamic scoring, because we don't count that here.
Senator Bach, more agreement, because we are going to have some folks come talk to the committee about dynamic scoring so we can consider the behavioral changes when we implement tax policy changes. And we don't do that yet in Minnesota, but I think it's something we should be talking about. Should we be talking about the stimulative effect of the bills that we consider in the tax policy? I, for one, speaking for myself, think, yes, we absolutely should. So, Senator Daley, do you have a comment on that?
Madam Chair, yes, I do. Absolutely. I agree. I am familiar with dynamic scoring, and I think we should do it, because instead of just talking about the cost and the expense, we should talk about the other side of what it does do. And this really, again, is a jobs bill. It's so important at this time to bring in talent. And this is a great opportunity to do that, and it's a perception changer, too, so that folks know Minnesota is a place to come as a veteran, as a young family, just having completed that military service. This is a place to go.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to echo your remarks about stimulative effect of lowering taxes and bringing more people to the state. As somebody who has spent her entire life in the private markets, I know that in my business, when I look at tax policy, I can look at how I can expand my business when the taxes are low, and I choose where the money goes and what the investment is in both talent and in equipment. So I think that in the state of Minnesota, we need to look about dynamic scoring instead of the static scoring that we have been looking at. I think we're being a little short-sighted.
Madam Chair,
Senator
we're
Buck.
Headed down a slippery slope, members, because there are all kinds of studies that are going to show that if you invest in early childhood funding, if you invest in those young kids pre-kindergarten, that there are huge savings to the state in the out years. Less incarceration, less crime, better performance in K-12. I mean, huge gains. So I just want to caution people as they talk about dynamic scoring. Members, we can't wish the state's budget problems away. We have real challenges to face this session, And somehow, if we think we can play some little accounting game and wish it away, I just want to caution you because, you know, we have a constitutional obligation to balance this budget.
Okay. Senator Bach, I don't think anybody underestimates the job ahead in terms of balancing the budget. We have folks in all of our committees working very hard at that, and I have great confidence that we're heading in that direction. But I think that we also could be talking about how do we make some adjustments in the way we view things around here, looking towards economic prosperity and putting Minnesota on a course that allows us an easier way and method for measuring what we do around here and also putting us on a course of economic prosperity and growth long term. And so we're having more than one conversation at one time, I think, capable of doing that. Senator Howe?
Well, I was just going to make the comment that I made before, that if business just looked at static scoring, no one would ever expand. And I think we do have to be concerned about our budgetary concerns. But exactly that point, if we need to make an investment in early child care and it's going to pay huge dividends in the future, then that's what we need to look at in the future. But we do have to look at a return on investment. And what I think dynamic scoring is it will be tricky business. I agree. I mean, you have to have good numbers to work from, and where is it going to lead to? But we do have to look at where our investments are going to pay back and where those dividends are going to come from. You're still going to have to balance the budget. So it won't be easy. And certainly even with this bill, we're going to have to look at the cost of it. And certainly if we can afford to do it, I certainly will support it.
Madam Chair, kind of
Senator Pogemiller and then Senator Bach.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, I would suggest to the majority they hire a fiscal replacement for Mr. Mossman, who is willing to technically support that type of activity, because I think technically you'll need that.
Well, Senator Pogemiller, I know that the department has looked at dynamic scoring, our Department of Revenue, and we're going to hear from Dr. Wilson about that. And perhaps Mr. Mossman as well. Maybe he would like to come.
No, I don't want Mr. Whoever you've hired to replace Mr. Mossman internally needs to be able to do that. And if it's a good idea, let's do it. But you better, my suggestion is to technically get somebody who's able to do that and willing to do that on a professional basis.
Senator Bach.
Well, and to that point, Madam Chair, I think, you know, if we're going to go down that road and allow the spending committees to spend money and claim they're raising money by spending money and be able to do that, claim they're raising revenue in their bills, I just would suggest, Madam Chair, that any of those bills that are going to spend new money that claim they're going to bring in revenue, that those bills should probably have the scrutiny of this committee before they go to the floor of the Senate, because it is the job of this committee to raise adequate revenue to keep the state's budget in balance. And before we go on the road of allowing the spending committees to raise money that is really in the purview of this committee, I think you'd be wise to probably have those bills come here so that you can check their math, that we do indeed have a balanced budget when we adjourn and go home.
Well, Senator Bach, we will hear all tax expenditures or expenditures by the state here in the tax committee. I assure you of that, and I've assured you of that in the past. I think that we're not going to give up jurisdiction in this committee, and we want you to check the math, too.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm not speaking to tax expenditures. For instance, if Senator Olson in the Education Committee decides to spend $50 million on early childhood and decides by making that investment that we are going to reduce the corrections budget or the K-12 budget by, we'll reduce spending in the out years by hundreds of millions of dollars, and then scores that money to pay for her investment. I think that's not a tax expenditure, Madam Chair, but I do think if they're going to score that as somehow savings or raising revenue, that this committee should take a look at it. That's all.
Senator Bach, I just think that's pretty far ahead of the conversation we're having, which is looking at tax bills in the tax committee and considering the behavioral impacts that when we change our tax code, Minnesotans will respond to those changes. And I think we're talking about tax bills and not necessarily other bills at this point. But we're going to have more conversation about that going forward.
Madam Chair, my only caution is if we're going to start dynamic scoring in this committee, the finance committees are going to want to do that too.
Senator Wieger, did you have a comment? Senator Daley?
Madam Chair, members, just to clarify one more point about this. If this does not perform, if this bill does not perform as we expect it to, there are two measures, at 30% and at 70%. If it's not achieving the numbers, the recruitment numbers of folks coming to Minnesota as we expect and hope, then it stops at that 30% first. If it's successful there, it keeps going up to 70%. If it's not achieving there anymore at that point, then it stops at 70%. Just to clarify.
Thank you, members. And without...
Madam Chair.
Senator Sundjum.
Madam Chair, I'm just compelled to say that, you know, I don't have to go to dynamic scoring to like this concept. And we got to certainly understand the affordabilities and so on and so forth, but... I think first and foremost, at least for me, this is about recognizing a group of people that are pretty special in our society, and frankly, we probably wouldn't be sitting in this room this morning but for the service of our military veterans. And to the extent that we can further honor them by recognizing them in our tax codes from the standpoint of an exemption, that in and of itself is good enough for me. These people have given us our freedom. These people have given us our country. These people have given us a state that we live in. That's in and of itself enough to seriously consider this bill.
Senator Sundjum, thank you for your comments. Of course. Okay, then, without further objection, Senate File 41 as amended, Senate File 59, and Senate File 74 will be laid over for a possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you, Senators,
and thank you for your contributions and the testimony this morning. We also have Senate File 142 with Senator Wieger. This one is a property tax application for military and surviving spouses of military. So, Senator Wieger, if you would just present the differences with Senate File 142 for the committee.
Excuse me, Madam Chair, the differences?
Senator Wieger, would you just explain your bill and how it works?
Yes, Senate File 142, Madam Chair, looks at the 2008 law that you passed for disabled veteran homestead tax exemption.
Good morning.
Right now, you get, if the veteran dies, you get another year, assessment year, and then the exemption is removed. This bill seeks to continue that exemption for the surviving spouse. And as you know, there is a cap in the statute now. If you're 70% disabled, it's $150,000 cap. If you are 100% permanent, then it's $300,000. We, in the fiscal note, it describes how many Minnesotans are affected. And just in the past several weeks, I've learned in my own district where this really comes close to home, where two veterans died, where the family was counting on this exemption to help make ends meet. And now for the widows, it could well be a question of whether she's going to be able to stay in the home. This would continue that exemption if the person remains in the same status, doesn't transfer the property, and continues to stay there. So with that background, Madam Chair, I'd like to introduce my first testifier, Rita Snelson of Maplewood.
Thank you. Ms. Snelson, welcome to the committee. Will you introduce yourself for the record?
Okay. My name is Rita Snelson, and I live in Maplewood, like Senator Wieger had said. My husband was a Vietnam vet. He served from July of 1968 through February of 1970. He was a combat vet. He returned home he came home with Agent Orange. He had a hand grenade blow up in his back. He also had post-traumatic stress, type 2 diabetes. As years went on, he just seemed to, you know, collect all these different issues with Agent Orange. At the age of 54, he was forced into retiring. Now, my husband never became a burden. He always carried his own weight. This is a picture of him, his military picture. And he was a Lance Corporal when he left the service. He also had a support group. He ran a support group to counsel other veterans, and he did that till the day he passed away. He also worked on, I don't know if anybody here is familiar with the the Veterans Memorial in Richfield. He was on the committee of that. This is what it's supposed to end up. He headed up the side of the construction, and this is a picture of before they broke the ground. This memorial was in honor of
Lindbergh,
Charles Lindbergh, and they made a statue of him as a centerpiece of the memorial. And after groundbreaking, Chuck Lindbergh was at the hog roast that they had to support. He passed away. Now, these are all just a very small piece of the volunteers that have been working with this project. My husband was a member of the Richfield VFW, post 5555. He was senior vice commander, and he passed away 4 days before he was sworn in. This is him working on the beginning stages of the project. He was an electrician. And just wanted to let you know that he put into the veterans. He supported, you know, whatever they needed. He was one of the first ones that would step up. And now my situation is, when he passed away, he was 60 years old. I was 54. The day that he passed away, I went to work as usual. That particular day, I had some errands to do. I was gone an hour later than usual. Let me step back just a second. The Thanksgiving before this, the day before Thanksgiving in 2008, he had a brain aneurysm. He did survive that. He never was the same. So this particular day, May 9th, 2009, I returned home after doing my errands because I didn't go too far after work. I came home and I had to take care of him. Well, anyway, I came home and found him in the bedroom. That was pretty... I'm so sorry.
It's okay. Doing fine.
Yeah. I still see it every day. This bill means to me that I can stay in my home. If this doesn't go through, I'm gone. I'm out. Where am I going to go? I'm so sorry.
Ms. Nelson, take your time. We're grateful for your testimony this morning. Thank you so much.
But my property value of my home went down $90,000 since 2001. How can this be a burden to the state to extend this? I also know younger widows in my same situation. They have kids that are still growing, schools that they want to stay in, districts. They're being forced out of their homes also. I don't think that this is fair. Obviously, I'm hearing all these things about the veterans today, and I understand each and every thing everyone is saying. But, you know, I'm just asking you, if this does not pass, please explain to me where I'm supposed to go and what I'm supposed to do. I live on a low budget. I'm making it. But with this budget, I just want you to consider what's going to happen to women like me in the future. So thank you for listening to me, and I'm sorry about my tears.
Well, thank you. Quite all right. And I'm personally moved by your story, and I really appreciate your being here today to share it. Thank you. Members, we also have Christine Stone, who is here to testify on this bill.
Well, I'm here to tell you why I feel this is a good bill. My husband, Victor, passed away this past April, just after our 69th wedding anniversary. As his widow, I no longer receive any of his Army pension, only his Social Security. He did not have any pension where he worked. This bill would certainly relieve the pressure in meeting my debts. He was very appreciative of the tax exemption bill, which was passed in 2008, because our taxes had gone from just under $1,000 to almost $3,000 in the past 6 years, and it was getting to be a little hard to meet. To tell you what I'm talking about, this is an 84-year-old house, which I bought 67 years ago when my husband went overseas. And I came there with a six-month-old baby and waited 19 months for him to come back. And so it's not an expensive home. It's just a place to live, and it means a lot to me, and I'm very fortunate to have lived there. My husband was 98 when he passed away, and I'm 90, so that gives you an idea of where we're at. Victor served with General Patton's 3rd Army in the 90th Division for 10 months in France, Germany, and Belgium during World War II as a warrant officer. In this picture, one of these pictures is he was a master sergeant when I married him. That was his, and then the other was when he became a warrant officer before he went overseas. And he planned to continue his Army career since he had already served 11 years. However, war injuries left him unable to do so, and he was given a partial disability discharge. He was able to live a normal life and worked in an office until he was past 70. I do appreciate this extra year of tax exemption, and passing of this bill would be very much appreciated. About 5 years ago, he was put on full disability because of his injuries. We have a number of friends who are veterans and were able to remain in their homes because of that tax exemption. I would like to thank any of you who were responsible for that. I know those veterans appreciated that, not just because of the money, as did my husband. It meant recognition of their service to America. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stone, and thank you, Senator Wieger, for bringing this bill and inviting these testifiers today. I thank you for your service. We have other testifiers, and Mr. Denias would like to make a comment.
Senator Rust, please. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Madam Chair and Senator Wieger or Council, I'm curious about the last sentence in the Ms. Off and Ms. Allen in your review here.
Senator Rust, could you speak just a little louder?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Thank
I have
you.
A call. it says that the benefit would continue the person would continue to be eligible for the exemption until the surviving spouse no longer owns the property. Now, I can understand if it is surviving spouse that resides in the homestead, but simply owning the property, is that an accurate reflection of what the bill does? You can own the property and rent it out. I don't think that's what we're talking about here in terms of saving someone's homestead and being able to continue to live in a home that you have lived in. But
yeah, absolutely.
I don't know
Madam
that
Chair,
we're talking about someone getting the benefit that then would rent the property out and go live somewhere else. Am I reading your statement right, or
Senator Wieger, can you address
your
attention?
Asking actually Ms. Off.
Senator Wieger,
Madam
like
Chair,
to address
Senator
the intention.
Rest members, the intent is for
the widower widower as a homestead and not as a rental property. And if that needs to be clarified, we can do that.
Ms. Duff, does the bill as drafted incorporate Senator Wigger's intention as he just stated it?
Madam Chair and Senator Rest, the current law does provide that the surviving spouse has to permanently reside in the property, and that is unchanged by this bill. So that would continue to be in effect.
Okay, so that's a little bit ambiguous in your last sentence there. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Zoff, if you can look to see if you think any other changes need to be made. I think what you're saying is it's already addressed in Section C of the bill. Other questions or comments about Senate File 142? I know that Mr. Benias wants to speak briefly on behalf of the bill, and we also have bill efforts from the Minnesota Assessor's Officer's past president, and he is here to speak on behalf of the counties. So, Mr. Denias, if you'd like to comment.
Once again, for the record, my name is Ralph Donay. I'm the chairman of the United Veterans Donay. Legislative Council. And again, our council brought this before our membership, and we wholly support this issue. Remember that this doesn't affect the state budget. This affects the counties. And last year, I believe you said you had the assessor's office coming in to testify. Last year, the statement was made that they had no problem with this bill going forward. And again, it doesn't take any money out of the state coffers. This comes out of the counties. And I don't know if it's a quarter or 50 cents a resident or whatever it costs the county. Last year, they made the statement that they were more than willing to do this for our widowers.
Well, sir, we'll let them testify as to their position this year. But
and I've had several ladies, excuse me, Madam Chair, I've had several ladies in Elk River that came up to me that said, I really don't want to leave Elk River, but I don't know that I can stay in my home. And they had supported their husband or their wife for the last 15 or 20 years. And Mr. Kaiser, on his flight that he takes World War II veterans to Washington, D.C., every flight he has to line up 70 or 80 wheelchairs. And those people are dying at an extreme rate these days, which is kind of sad that we're losing all our World War II veterans. But it kind of shows you that how many people out there need that extra support, Madam Chair.
Thank you, sir. And I hope you'll forgive me for having mispronounced your name so many times. Is it Donay? Is that correct?
I've been called Donay, Donald's Donuts. I mean, AU works top. You know.
But the correct pronunciation?
It's a French name. It's Donay.
Donay. Thank you so much, sir. And we have Mr. Efforts from the County Assessors Association. Mr. Efforts, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I am Bill Efforts. I'm the Assistant Hennepin County Assessor, and I'm the Legislative Chair for the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. And I humbly come before you today from a viewpoint of a property tax administrator. To this point, we've been reluctant, because of the sensitivities associated with these issues, reluctant to testify. But at this point, I'd just like to give a global viewpoint of this policy issue. We have no whatsoever viewpoint on the policy statements, but we appreciate the opportunity to be able to come before you and just give you our slant on the property tax administration. We did get an opportunity to talk to Senator Wigger yesterday and explained some of our concerns. He certainly heard us, but he thought that I should just come before you all and tell you what those might be. I make my comments with all due respect to our testifiers today. We have no opinion about the policy issue. Part of our concerns is currently with the vets exclusion, statewide we have about, for 2010 assessment, there's about $1.3 billion being excluded. In Hennepin County, we have $179 million excluded. Ramsey County has $75 million. Stearns County has $73 million. In the Carlton County, it's a relatively small county, but they have a large number of veterans exclusions, over almost about 1% of their total tax base is being excluded. They have a high concentration of veteran exclusions. I think they can attribute that to the good service of their Veteran Affairs Office, as well as being located in a close proximity to the Superior Wisconsin Vets Hospital. So there is some shifting going on there. And I guess our main concern is, you know, not so much with this issue of extending it, but it's just that we look at one issue and these issues begin to pull at our heartstrings, and collectively, one issue alone, it seems like a good issue worthy of doing something about it. But from our perspective, if you take all of the single issues and put them together, it helps to create some of the complexities associated with this. And mind you that assessors do the best of our abilities to administer whatever policy direction you tell us to go in. We do that with our limited resources. Currently, I think part of the issue with this bill would be that it comes back to transparency, is that if someone other than the veteran themselves are receiving the benefit, we don't usually know when the veteran does pass, I guess. There's no real mechanism for us to know other than when interested neighbors are checking on the values, they let us know if something passes there. So currently, if you are 70% disabled, you are required for an annual application. So we just think there's some way that we could work on this with Senator Wieger. I guess that's all I have at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Effort. Senator Wieger.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And as the testifier said, they aren't here to weigh in on the policy, just to point out impact. And on a case-by-case, we look at what is sound public policy. On the issue of potential fraud, it has to be renewed each year if there's the 70% disability. For that veteran that is 100% disabled, that's died, I believe it's already on the form that you notify. I'm not aware, you've heard from a couple of widows, I'm not aware of fraud in this area. If you have evidence, you know, let us know. Maybe there could be a lien or something. I imagine that would happen anyway on the property if there was fraud, but I'm not aware that that is a problem. So I would respectfully, you know, take your position as not against the bill, just pointing out a couple of implementation concerns.
Senator Wieger, are you willing to work with Mr. Efforts about language regarding the notice that he's talking about, that folks that are impacted by an exemption like this, if we were to adopt it, would have some responsibility to notify the county about what the status is?
Yes, Madam Chair. And I would point out, too, I'm very aware of our financial picture, and I had some discussions with people regarding means test. I'm reaching out to those widows or widowers that may be forced out of the home. If someone has a significant adjustable gross income, that could perhaps be used as a means test here. If someone is doing well and not at risk of losing their place, then that could be factored as well, and I would be open to suggestions there as well. And as I said initially, when you passed the bill in 2008, we do cap now at $150,000 and $300,000, depending on the disability. I'm not aware of abuse. If we need to put in additional safeguards to protect that and notice requirements, we'll do that. The main thing is for those people to stay in their house. And that could, I just heard about the Elk River examples, but I'm sure throughout the state that could be the case.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Wieger, regarding your bill, do you have any financial analysis of how it would affect property tax owners throughout the state, or do you have a breakdown by county? That would be helpful for us to make a decision.
Senator Wieger.
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, I don't have a county breakdown. I believe it's minimal, the impact for the average taxpayer as to what it would be, but I would have to get a county breakdown. There was some reference made for some of the counties by the assessor, and whether and I believe I will have some suggested changes on means tests, which could make the impact even less.
Members, Ms. Von Mosch has some information from the Department of Revenue about the shift on the property tax burden. We have questions from Senator Marty and Senator Rest, and I have one as well. And Mr. Efforts, my question is for you. Just to clarify your testimony, did you say that $1.3 billion is excluded now on an annual basis, and that if we continue this, it's likely to be in that range on an ongoing basis?
Madam Chair, members, that is for the 2010 assessment statewide, $1.3 billion exclusion. I believe that has grown. That would that number has grown over the years, too.
All right. Thank you. Senator Marty. Senator Rest.
Just clarify that. That's market value, not tax capacity, correct?
That is market value.
Market.
Thank you, Mr. Efforts. Senator Marty.
Yeah, Madam Chair, mine relates to what Ms. Von Mosch is going to answer, I guess. But the question I had is, it says the shift sounds fairly minimal right now, 400,000 the first year, then 600, then almost 900. Is that continue to go up, or is that a function of the World War II veterans dying and it's going to level off?
Madam Chair, Senator Marty and Senator Limmer, that was the sentence I was going to point out in the revenue estimate. And if you look right up at the top at that second page in the revenue estimate, they assume that there's a 3% annual growth rate. And so that would, I believe that would continue going up a little bit each year. But the revenue estimate does show actually that this generates a small amount of revenue to the general fund, because that amount of shifting is spread over many households, whereas the people who would be getting this extension would not be qualifying for a property tax refund, so it actually generates some savings for the state general fund.
Thank you. Senator Wigger, do you want to give us some direction here? Would you like to continue to work on this bill with some of the items that have been brought up, or would you like us to take it as it is and act on it as it is currently drafted? Senator Wigger.
Well, Madam Chair, I believe we can improve it, and with some of the questions, and ultimately I'd like to see something in your omnibus bill, and if you wanted to lay it over for possible inclusion, with the understanding that I would work with you and designees and other stakeholders, that would be great.
Well, Senator Wigger, just for my purposes, I think that notice is one that we would definitely want to see you continue to work on, see if there's some way that we can address that issue and maybe address some of the other senators' concerns. I think it'd be good to see how that impact of the property taxes breaks out. We've talked a little bit about that, but we've only talked about 1 year as opposed to what happens if you extend it for multiple years and how long are the extensions generally. Mr. Efforts.
Madam Chair, members, I just wanted to clarify some of the testimony. I wasn't necessarily saying that this program is wrought with fraud. That wasn't my intention. I was just saying that the complexities associated with the administration of this program and enforcing the administration. Thank you.
All right. Members, without objection, the chair would recommend laying this bill over for possible inclusion. It is Senate File 142. Without objection, it's adopted. Members.
Thank you.
Thank you both, Senator Wigger and Mr. Efforts. And to Ms. Snelson, and the other one was Ms. Stone, thank you so much for sharing your stories with us. Thank you very much. Next week, members, on Tuesday, we will hear Senator Miller's Green Acres bill, and he has multiple testifiers in support of that bill. On Wednesday, Mr. Mossman will join us, and he will present the governor's tax portions of his 2012-13 budget proposal. And Thursday is yet to be determined, so hang tight on that one. We'll get back to you with more information. Without any further business, this hearing's adjourned.